Hello there. Welcome to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Swanee Chakemore, and I started Pathfinder 101 with the intention of examining various professions beyond the basics by interacting with experienced professionals from various careers. This blog and podcast are from a high schooler's point of view. I hope you benefit from some of the information provided in the various blog posts and interviews. Finance and accounting are crucial skills required in any business because they allow businesses to confidently make decisions on how to allocate their money, record their transactions, comply with industry practices, etc. While many small and medium-sized business owners choose to learn these skills on their own to manage their day-to-day operations, consulting firms specialize in this area and take on these responsibilities to help businesses manage their financial health and accounts for them. Today, we'll be talking with Mr. Jay Smith, Director of Finance and Accounting for the South Central Region at Jefferson Wells. He has worked at Electronic Data Systems, Corporation Service Company, and Affiliated Computer Services. We will be hearing about why he chose to pursue finance and accounting and the different factors that have helped him in his journey to where he is today.
Hey there.
Hi, Mr. Smith. Let's jump right into the questions.
So as a high school student, understanding various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there are so many different choices available. And even if we hear about something, the exposure we get to those careers is very limited. So I'd like to take you back to your high school days when you're thinking about your college or your career. And I'm assuming that you were probably in a similar situation like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. But after a few years, you have a successful career today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey. So we're just trying to garner that information and understand your journey.
Great.
So my first question is, what did you want to become when you were a high school student? And what made you consider that particular career at that time, such as like parents or mentors or certain experiences?
Sure. So I think to your point, you know, we look around and we try to emulate what those that are close to us have done and have been successful at. So I had a I had an uncle of mine who was the COO of Texas Health Resources. So that's Presbyterian Hospital here in Dallas. And so he was the COO. And I knew that, for instance, he ended up going to Austin College and then going to graduate school at Trinity University because they have a hospital administration program. So that's really what I wanted to do. And then I also saw my own father, and my father was the CEO of a company called Tuesday Morning. And so, you know, I didn't come from a family of lawyers. I did not come from a family of doctors. So all I really knew was the business aspect. So instead of diving straight into just hospital administration, I decided to pursue, at least for my first couple years, a pretty wide range of activities at college that would get me, you know, at least a general understanding and possibly get me into business school.
So in talking about like colleges, there's a wide variety of factors you could consider, such as like the prestige of the college or the location of the college, the size of the college. So what are some that you took into consideration? And what role do you think a college plays in shaping up someone's career status or like management status?
Yeah, so I don't think, now this is my personal opinion and may not be very popular with people, but I do not think a college decision is a career make or break decision. I think what did it for me was the size and where I thought I would excel. Okay, so had I ended up at a Caltech or an MIT, I would not have excelled. I would probably not have been happy. I most likely would have struggled, and therefore it just would not be a good experience. I ended up at a smaller school. I ended up at Tulane University in New Orleans. And I wish I could tell you that there was one reason that I decided to go there, but there really isn't. You go and you visit these colleges, and it's kind of where you feel you fit and where you feel that you will make the most of that experience. For me, I visited Emory, I visited Vanderbilt, I visited University of Texas, I visited Tulane, and you know, UT for me was just a little too large, and I thought I'd just get lost. And coming from a school, my graduating class, by the way, from St. Mark's was only 64 people. So all of a sudden now going to a class of, or a school of 55,000, it just was not appealing to me. However, I did have some classmates that went there and they did wonderful things with it. So I think you have to make that decision based on whatever is important to you. And just to add a little more light, so now I'm to the point where my son, who's 18 years old, will be going off to college next year. And, you know, we looked all over California, we looked at upstate New York, we looked at all over the East Coast and technology schools and whatnot. And he came down to Colorado. And one of the schools that he was very interested in was Colorado School of Mines for engineering. But, you know, he also wanted to do some business courses. And that school did not offer the depth or breadth of business that he really wanted. So he's actually ended up going to a private university called the University of Denver. So where he will be able to, and once again, this is depending on what your future looks like. You know, he likes the opportunity to get two majors, two minors, and if he wants, spend 2 years abroad. And he just got there and it felt right for him.
And specifically, what different factors did you consider when choosing your major?
Choosing my major, probably it was first, you know, we get a glimpse of in this in, let's call it high school, middle school, what I was good at, what I enjoyed doing. I had wonderful teachers, but I was not a physics person. I knew that that was not in my cards. Was I good at math? Yes, I was always wonderful at math, but for some reason, me and physics, we just did not get along. So engineering was not going to be my strong suit, especially if you look at like a mechanical or whatnot. I think it's just your environment, what you're brought up with. I was always brought up with at the dinner table talking about business issues. I was brought up talking about economic issues. And I think that that has a trickle down effect. And therefore, that's where my interests lie. And it's something that I felt I was knowledgeable about. It's something I felt I was good at. And it was something I felt I could make a career out of. I've had this, I've had this conversation and we all have interests, but I'm not sure if, unless you're really good at it, maybe playing Fortnite is really what's going to earn me a living to raise a family years from now. So I think it's a lot of different things. But for me, it was, what my interests are from those that were close around me, and plus what I just enjoyed in high school.
Sort of an extension off of that question, we hear like the statement "follow your passion" many times. Is that something that was very applicable to your life? Do you agree with that, or do you think that sometimes these can be distracting? And not often with young growth wise.
No, I'm a big believer of that to a certain extent. When we say follow our passions, you know, I've had a lot of passions in my life, but at the end of the day, I'm a believer that passions can always be hobbies, but they may not be the lifeblood of, you know, how you're going to make money. So, right, I have a job right now that I get paid a salary for. My passions happen to be children. My passions happen to be community service. I'm actually able now to put those passions and focus on my passions much more now that I've got a job also. And I'm not saying my job is not my passion. I love what I do, but you know, I'm the chairman of the board of the Simonis Family YMCA right up the road. It used to be known as Town North YMCA. I'm a scout leader to five different scouting units here in the Dallas Metroplex. I volunteer any number of different with any number of different organizations with Financial Executives International. I'm the president of that. So I think you have to follow your passions, because if you just follow your, let's call it academia and what earns you money, I think you're going to get burned out. And if you don't have those passions to fall back on and actually glean some love of life when the job aspect of your life is tough, then you, in my opinion, or at least for me, I would not be happy.
This next question is sort of twofold. So did you have any doubts or hesitation throughout your journey? And given your current exposure to different fields, would you do anything differently if you could go back in time?
Oh, that's a tough one. Unlike others, I never changed majors. Okay. So it's not like one day I wanted to be an architect, the next day I wanted to be a vet, the next time I wanted to be an accountant. I will tell you, I went into general business and I received a degree in finance. If I had to do it over again, I would have stuck with the business route, no doubt about it. I probably would have gone into accounting and gotten a CPA. Now, why do I say that? Do I want to be a CPA? Do I want to sit behind a 10 key operating a calculator and doing that for the rest of my life? No, but I will tell you, I think that if you have the opportunity, especially in the business world, to get a certification like a CPA, all it does is help you. And even if you don't do that, it's always something to fall back on. So that would probably have been my only change. And why I did not do that is, quite frankly, I was scared. I had heard horror stories. You know, you have to first off, it's a 5-year master's program. So it would have tacked on another year of school. It's pure accounting, which I was so-so. I mean, I was fine at it. That's what I do for a living now. But I was afraid of, you know, sitting back then for all 4-5 parts of the CPA exam over a 6-hour period, not passing it. I mean, you hear these horror stories of people that take this thing 5 and 6 times and never pass it. And then your logical fit to go into anything with a CPA would be into public accounting. And you hear horror stories of people getting burnt out in public accounting. So I figured, you know what? I'm a little more analytical. I will go the finance route and really hone in on those skills. But that's probably the only change I would have done. Now, I will tell you, though, since doing that, that was a while ago, right? Since doing that, I have gone back to school 3 times to further my education to different areas of interest for me.
So what are some important skills or habits that you wish you developed earlier or that you believe are crucial to your job today?
Time management is probably the biggest one. And I think that that probably has to do with the fact of how many other extracurricular activities that I'm involved in. So not only sitting, I guess I sit now on 3 different boards and 2 other civic organizations, as well as my full-time job and taking care of, you know, my wife and I have 2 children. Time management was critical. Do not underestimate the power of making lists. Do not underestimate the power of, I hate to say this, but color coding your Microsoft Outlook, you know, stuff like that. So you know exactly where it falls. I would also say the one thing that I would have done, which I did not do in New Orleans, was probably take better care of myself personally. I think we get caught up in college, new careers, friends, family. We end up, you know, starting a job early in the morning. We go out till all hours of, well, the next morning. And I think that if you continue to do that, the body can only handle that for so long. So if I had to sum it up kind of in 2 different areas, time management and just take better personal care of yourself, because as you get older, it's harder and harder to do.
What role have mentors played in your journey, and how important do you think networking is for your career specifically?
Okay, so let's take that in 2 parts. Mentor. I think mentors have played a tremendous role for me, but I'm not necessarily sure if it's as much job related. I have had a great mentor in my father, but my father passed away 22 years ago. So, you know, that's quite a while without that mentor, but I've always had my uncle, who I referred to earlier, as a great mentor in terms of just business and how I run a business. Now, in terms of you know, other mentors that I've had, you know, I will look back at my scoutmaster, but that was for, you know, he's not the one that helped me with accounting or finance. He's the one that helped me see something, see a goal, and move towards that goal. You know, my first boss at EDS, Electronic Data Systems, where I started, she's the one that helped me understand the ropes, really understand, and held me accountable for everything. So I've had some wonderful mentors. Now, onto your second part, how important is networking? I cannot stress networking enough. Okay. In my business, and let me back up and tell you what I do now. So I am the director of finance and accounting for a consulting firm, where it is my job to go out and make sure that if I send a group of consultants out onto a project, that they are performing their duties. And we're only out there for weeks or months to help them over a hump. So I'm constantly out in the field. I'm constantly out visiting with clients, trying to find more clients. Networking is critical. Back in the day, You know, when I started my career in, 2000s, let's call it, you would have a resume, you'd have a nice printed resume, you might have a cover letter, you would either, drop it by an office or even back then email it. You might fax it back then. Now, since part of my business is also recruiting individuals, I will tell you that it is not necessarily what you know, it is who you know. So if somebody comes to me and they say, Jay, there's a position over at Tesla and I want this position, I will tell you that you and 500 of your closest qualified friends also want that position. And unless you are one of the first 10 resumes on that stack, they are not even going to look at you. I can guarantee that they are, because in those first 10 resumes, they are going to find three qualified people that they want to talk to. And chances are they are going to hire one of them. Whereas if they come to me and they say, Jay, I want to work at Tesla, I can say, what position is it? Okay. Now then, since this is my business, I'm the one that can call and say, oh yeah, I know the vice president out there. Why don't you let me give her a call and I will chat with her. And I cannot guarantee you a job out there, but at the very least, I can guarantee that she looks at your resume. So networking is absolutely critical. And 95% of the jobs that people will get, maybe not right after college, but after that, will be through somebody that they know and not through submitting something on Indeed or Monster or stuff like that. So, I would hone in on networking skills. Networking is not just about going to a function and standing there. If you are not going to go there and actually be willing to put yourself out there, meet people, talk to them, and follow up, then that is not networking. That is attending an event for a free glass of iced tea. That's my soapbox right there.
Could you dive a little bit into exactly what networking entails and how to effectively network?
Sure. And by the way, I don't know if my contact information is going to be on here, but anybody who listens to this and wants help with this, you let me know, because network. So I guess there's two different kinds of networking. I would say networking is, or maybe even three different kinds. Networking is person-to-person networking. That is meeting somebody for coffee, meeting somebody once you're old enough for a beer or a cocktail after work, and sharing experiences. And here is something that is critical to all networking, is at the end of a conversation with somebody, always leave with, how can I help you? Okay. How can I help you is key. It makes you part of a teamwork, that fabric that glues you together to say, hey, this person really does want to help me. And therefore, if I need help from them, should they call on my help later on, I will be more than willing to repay that. So I would say there's person-to-person networking. That could be colleagues, that could be students, that could be parents' friends. I did this when I was trying to get into graduate school and law school. I ended up going to University of Virginia for my graduate schools. And what did I do is I reached out to those other graduates who were very successful business people here in the Dallas area. And I wasn't asking them to help me get into grad school. I was asking them on their advice, on their perspective on what the school was like. So I would say the other one is those communities or those organizations that have like interests to your own. So I told you earlier, I'm the president of a group called Financial Executives International, FEI. We are a group of 500 to 700 senior level finance and accounting executives. Who better for me to network being in the finance and accounting industry than 500 to 700 of my colleagues here in Dallas that are doing the exact same, right? So I would say like-minded organizations like that. And so, I mean, and I can only speak to myself, but if you're a payroll professional, there is a American Payroll Associates, you all can, cry about all the problems that you had and compare notes and share stories. There's medical associations, there's builders associations. So to recap, first one is person to person. Second one is those like-minded situations. The third ones, I would say, are those that just happen out of the blue. I'm sitting there at an airport waiting for something, and I overhear a conversation of somebody going, well, yeah, we're behind schedule, or we're doing so-and-so. And I turn to them and say, hey, I don't mean to eavesdrop, but I heard you're having problems with that. You know what? We just went through that as well. So there's those people that you meet at cocktail parties, at sporting events, waiting in line at the coffee shop. So networking is all about, you know, finding, having an open eye for that opportunity and being able to be brave enough to just throw it out there for the first time. If they don't want to talk to you, they aren't going to talk to you. But more often than not, I think people are very, very open to it. The biggest mistake I see in networking, though, is going to one of these events, and I alluded to this before, and saying that you're going to a networking event, but not networking. You go, you get yourself a soda, and you stand there waiting for somebody to approach you. And that is not networking. You need to learn how to read body language. You need to see which groups are open to new members. You know, if there's a group of four people and they are all clustered together face to face, don't try to break into that group. But if there's a group of three individuals and they've left an opening that you can just come up, go up and introduce yourself. Hey, I'm so-and-so. What's your name? Who are you with? Oh, I see it on your name tag. And be willing to do that, because otherwise all you're doing is wasting your. How's that?
That was very detailed. Thank you. So in terms of like staying ahead in the industry, you mentioned networking, obviously, and also that you went back to like schooling like three times, I think you mentioned.
Well, I went back to do my MBA, and I did some law in there as well at University of Virginia. And then I went back to Harvard for business and data analytics.
So what other steps do you take on a daily basis to stay ahead?
So I think what I do, I stay knowledgeable on what is coming down the pipe, whether it's new technologies, new trends. In my world of accounting and finance, there's always new regulations that are hitting. And seeing that my job or my firm's job is to help clients through these, I can't go help these clients if I don't know what help they need. So I am constantly going out, I'm constantly learning, I'm getting new certifications. I probably get 3 to 4 new certifications per year on those topics and those ideas that are most pertinent to my clients. And even if I only use those certifications for 2 years, it's still something that I have that I can put on a resume, that I can speak intelligently to. Go out there and not only see what's going on in your industry. Like I said, I'm accounting finance. Go and see what's going on in the medical field. Go in and see what's happening in oil and gas, because that all these things are intertwined. Okay. Especially for me, who's just business, you know, I need to know what's going on. I need to know if there's consolidations going on in hospitals right now. I need to know if there's new regulatory laws related to Medicare, Medicaid going on, because that's when I'm going to be brought in. So don't be siloed just to say, well, I just need to know about business issues. No, you need to know about a lot of different issues. Probably our biggest piece of the business right now is financial services. So think about insurance, banks, credit unions. I'm not a banker. I don't run a credit union. I'm not a bank teller, but I have those as clients. So the only way I can be helpful to them is stay abreast as to what's coming down, whether it's 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, you know, 24 months down the pipe.
And could you give a brief overview of what like a typical day or week looks like for you, and what's your favorite aspect and least favorite aspect of your work?
Sure. So, my job is to make sure that at any given time, I have got teams of people out helping clients. So whether that's Toyota, whether it's Walmart, whether it's IBM or whoever, I get a phone call from a CFO or one of my team members does, and they say, hey, listen, we need a person or some people to come out and help us with this aspect of finance or accounting. So that said, my day starts very early. That's just my own pattern. It typically starts in this office in front of these monitors. It is first off seeing if anything happened overnight that I need to be aware of. We do also have international clients. So there could be something that happens at 3 a.m. and, you know, I may have only a few hours before I need to respond, before they go home because of where they are located. Other than that, I am doing a lot of meetings with current clients. Hey, how's everything going? Think of it as a status report. current consultants, hey, are you getting everything you need? Are we making progress on this project? And also new prospects. Hey, Jay, I need you to sit down with me and talk to this potential client about what they need and how we might solve their problem. Now, the best part of my day is that it is never the same. It is not a 9-to-5 with a 45-minute lunch break. A lot of times it starts at 3 o'clock in the morning and it can end at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or it can end at midnight. Okay. Sometimes there is no lunch break. So it's always different. It is very flexible. The worst part, though, about my job or about my day, and I think this is more of a personality trait, and I think it's maybe just that accountant finance person in me. I don't like surprises. And sometimes one of my team members will get a call and they will call and say, hey, Jay, in 8 minutes, can you hop on a phone call? Well, I always like to be prepared. And so giving me 8 minutes to get up to speed on something, that frustrates me. Okay. Also, the other aspect is what happens if I have a project whereby the client's expectations and our firm's expectations are not aligned. So I put somebody to work out helping a client and the client calls me and says, Jay, I'm sorry, this is just not working. We're going to have to fire you. Those are tough conversations to have. And they don't happen often, but I'm not going to tell you that they never happen either. So the great thing is flexibility. You feel like you're almost always on call. Okay. I have clients that will, you know, I may be in bed at 10:30. It is not unheard of to get emails, text messages, phone calls at, you know, all hours of the night and weekends as well, if something is going wrong. So on
that topic, you were talking about like taking time for yourself earlier in your career because you don't get that much of an opportunity later on. So what is your take on like a work-life balance and what steps do you take to achieve it, or do you give any importance to it at all?
Yeah, I'm probably not the person to ask that question because I don't. I mean, I guess I do have work-life balance in the fact that I have separated my work from my life. But my work, if we call it 50 to 60 hours a week, now my life is also, I mean, my life is typically 5 to 6 nights out per week. Whether it's entertaining clients or going to kids' functions, I think it is very important. But I guess the one thing I would tell people to do that I am not good at is learn to say no. Okay. When you start getting a family, maybe when you get married or when you start building your career at the firm, the company, whatnot, and you are seen as an individual that gets things done, they will come and they will ask you to do things. And if you keep saying yes, they will keep coming back to you. If you keep doing that, they will never stop. And it's nothing against them. They just want a good person to help them overcome these obstacles or what they need. So learn to say no to these folks. So I think work-life balance, although I think a lot of people think that work-life balance means, well, I have free time. For me, I don't have free time. I have my work and then I have my life. And my life may be, like I said, it's every night, it's all weekend, it's whatnot, but it's something that brings me energy that's how I define my work-life balance.
And one factor to consider while choosing a job or career is compensation. It's certainly not the most important, but in general, without going into specifics, what can someone expect in this profession, perhaps like in comparison to other professions?
I can tell you that, you know, you probably hear, you know, ramp up slower maybe than maybe other professions. This is not going to be right. This is a profession that you can start at the age of 23 with a CPA. And by the time some of you go in there, you're going to be getting, you know, anywhere between $75,000 to $95,000 a year, you know, for your first job. Now, it also depends on the market. Right. I also did investment banking at one point where, you know, you would go to grad school and your minimum pay was $225,000. Okay. So it's not like getting out of med school and being an anesthesiologist and making, you know, $400,000, $500,000 a year. But I can tell you in this market right now, if you are an accountant or a finance person and you have a decent resume together, you will get 3 to 5 offers in a matter of 24 to 36 hours. Now, once again, I'm speaking to Dallas, and right now the market is super hot. So, and you will continue to go there. Think about a CFO, a smaller to mid company CFO making 150, 175,000. We have CFOs now that are, you know, in that 10, 12, 15, $18 million. So it's all over the board.
One like multifold question that I wanted to ask was, what skills are like very useful to your profession? You already answered that in terms of time management, but I've noticed like through our conversation that your like ability to communicate is like very advanced, I'd say. So what are some steps that you take or habits that you develop to maintain this or improve this on a daily basis?
Practice, practice, practice. That's all I can tell you. And that's why networking is so good to get out there. It gives you the opportunity to hone those skills and, you know, get comfortable speaking to other people. You know, perhaps one of people's biggest fears is speaking in front of large groups. It was for me too. And, you know, as soon as I started networking with one-on-one, and then I started networking with 3 or 5 people, or maybe I sat on a panel, started doing that. Now, you know, because of my job, I'm giving presentations to 500 to 700 people, you know, traveling around the United States. So practice, practice, practice is really what I can tell you to do, especially in terms of communication. You know, I am an introvert by nature. But my job, and something that I did not realize about my job, is even though I hung up really my accounting and finance, I hung up my calculator years ago to instead go into management. My job now is to talk to clients and really talk to them about what's bothering them, what's keeping them up at night, and what their pain points are. So the more you do it, the more you're going to be comfortable with it. There's groups called Toastmasters and all this stuff that give you that practice. But until you have real life experience, you aren't going to master.
This is like a hypothetical situation that I'm just going to create. If you're looking at a fresh graduate from, let's say, CPA or something else like that to hire to your company, what are some attributes or experiences in their life that you'd look for if you're hiring them like solely based on merit?
Yeah, well, let me start off by saying some of the best accountants I've ever worked with have not been CPAs, and some of the worst accountants I've worked with have been CPAs. So when I look at that, that necessarily isn't all that it's cracked up to be, okay? What that proves to me is that you know how to take a test. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not, for all you people out there that are CPAs and you're listening to me, don't come and try to burn my house down. It still shows you have a great deal of knowledge. What I look for is your ability to apply that knowledge to unique situations. I look also at what you've done in your past that has shown that you've been able to create a goal and you have worked towards that goal. I will use the one thing, Eagle Scouts. Eagle Scouts tend to be few and far between, but it shows that they've worked for 3 to 7 years on a long-term goal and have been able to do that. The other thing that I think that is really beneficial when I look for qualities in individuals is I'm looking at how much they are going to meld with my team. I'm not looking for the person that is out at 5 o'clock every day, even though other people are working till 5:45. I'm looking for a person who will come in and say, listen, I don't want you working till 5:45. We as a group should leave at 5:20 together. So let me jump in and help you. I'm looking for somebody that has energy. Okay. Looking for somebody that presents a positive attitude, a positive energy, and in my business is presentable to a client, right? It's one thing if you just want to sit at your desk and just churn through spreadsheets. That's one thing. And there's a certain skill set that goes with that. But if I'm sending you out to a client, most of the times I'm sending you in front of a CEO, a COO, a board of directors, an audit committee, and I need you to be able to communicate and present yourself well enough. In nice clothes, right? I don't need you in a cutoff t-shirt and jean shorts and sandals. So I think all of that, and you know, I mentioned this earlier on the networking thing. I think it's also follow through. So even when I'm interviewing somebody, I love a note afterwards. It doesn't have to be handwritten. It doesn't have to be any of that. It could be a text. It could be LinkedIn. It could be an email. But what it shows me is that they have that follow through. So I hope, did that get to kind of what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I think the next question I'll ask, I just have a list of questions here that I'm just looking at. How has this profession changed in the last couple of decades, especially with the advancement of technology and social media?
Sure. So social media, I wouldn't say is that big of a deal here, except for promoting your brand, promoting brand awareness and kind of what you do. In terms of technology, right, a lot of what we do has, to a certain extent, been automated. Okay. Anybody can take, let's, you know, without getting too technical, machines now can take an invoice and they can go ahead and scan it through and put it all up on the screen and show a debit and a credit and how everything plays out. So that has taken out some of the transactional aspect. Back when people used to bring out their 10 key and do this and code invoices here and look at this, that aspect, it's not entirely gone, but it is to a large extent, it has been automated. But what we have not lost, or the what has not been automated, is the ability to analyze that data. Okay. Up until then, hours were spent inputting. 90% of your time was spent inputting the data. 10% of the time was actually spent analyzing the data. Now with technology, what that's allowed us to do is all the data is there, and now we need to make sense of it. And so to answer a previous question, once I saw that that was the pattern we were taking, that's why I went back into data analytics, because that is the art of making business decisions and forecasting and predicting future trends with current and past data. The data part now is taken care of. Now we need to get using that technology to make smart business decisions.
So in terms of this specific field, like finance and accounting, what are some different roles that people can play, like such as your role and like different jobs that basically exist in this field? And what are some different routes to get to those jobs?
Okay. So kind of different areas in my profession, my background, you can go into what I like to look at it. And I'm going to try not to be too long-winded, but when I look at just business school, let's just focus on business school. We've got, there's all sorts of different areas. There's accounting, which I consider is looking back on what has happened in the past. There is finance, kind of looking forward to what's going on in the future. There's marketing. There's organizational behavior. There's stuff like that. Now, I can speak directly to accounting and finance. Under the accounting umbrella, you can go be an accountant for any number of companies. Every company needs accountants. I've never met a company that does not have somebody at least reviewing their books and looking at, you know, what the financials look like. So from there, though, there's different aspects. You know, there's industry specific. We can do oil and gas. That's completely different than healthcare, than hospitality, than manufacturing, renewable resources, stuff like that. So you can get very industry specific. Most of the industries are pretty agnostic because for a lot of times accounting is accounting, but there are some nuances from industry to industry. You can go to a private company. You know, this is something that it's a company I own and I hire an accountant, bring them in. I can go to a public company and I can go into, you know, this is one that's publicly traded on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. There's a whole different set of rules and regulations in terms of Sarbanes-Oxley, SEC reporting. There's different backgrounds in audit where you aren't necessarily doing the accounting, but you're reviewing all of it. Okay. And if you decide to go into accounting, you know, right after college, a lot of people go into public accounting, which we would call the big four, the EY, PwC, Deloitte, KPMG, where you go and you are the auditors or you're helping folks, you're helping other companies that need to get audited financials out the door. If you go into finance, you can go, you know, a lot of times that might be a treasury role where we're doing daily cash management, making sure there's enough cash on hand. We're bringing in enough cash and paying out in accordance so that we don't dip below a certain number in order to keep up with bank covenants. There's investment banking. There's any number of different areas you can do. I did investment banking, but instead of doing just mergers and acquisitions, I did that at a corporate level. I went and worked on the New York Stock Exchange. So trading in bonds and trading in foreign exchange currency. So, and then there's what I do right now, which is, you know what? We provide a unique service whereby companies may not need to hire somebody to get them over the hump. You know, nobody wants to hire somebody on and bring them on, onboard them, get all their benefits set up if it's only a 3-month need. So what we do now is we provide that accounting and finance need that's on a temporary basis. And you pay us either by the project or by the hour to perform those duties. So I will say, now, how do you go about doing it? My first suggestion would be if you're graduating with an accounting degree, my suggestion is go for that master's, get that CPA, and go into public accounting. Stick there for 2 years. You will be able to write your ticket just about anywhere else. The other option, though, is to go, and this is what I did, is I found a large corporation who I went in at a very entry level and was able to train up, okay? It is a great training ground. You work awfully hard, but it's well worth it. From a finance experience, you know, well, let me back up. From a treasury type of roles, really most companies that have a treasury department are very large companies. Therefore, there are not as many treasury related jobs out there. A lot of times you're going to have to go to those big corporations. If you decide that you want to go into mergers and acquisitions or investment banking in general, you're going to have to find yourself in another city. Yes, we have boutique firms, say here in Dallas, but you're going to find yourself in New York City, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Boston, unless you want to head over to London and do that. So, I mean, really, once again, we're going to go back. It's also about that networking. Talk to people before you need to make that decision. Watch blogs like this to say, hey, is this what interests me? And if so, let me reach out to Jay. Let me reach out to Shane. Let me reach out to so-and-so and get their opinion, because you'll find most of us are not afraid to give you our opinions on what you should do with the rest of your life.
And sort of an extension off of that question, what are different ways high schoolers or college students can get involved in terms of maybe internships or certain experiences that might add value later on?
Sure. I guess it depends on whether you want a paid or unpaid internship. I will tell you, typically formal internship programs are going to be a lot of times at larger companies, okay, where they bring in a class of 20 people. You all come in the same day, you're working for 3 months, whatnot. You know, seek those out, seek out those big companies, call the Toyotas, call PGA, call whoever, and call that company that you might be able to see yourself working for years down the road. If you've always wanted to work for Amazon, call them first and say, do you have a formal internship program? I will tell you what I did in college. I was not equipped to find a internship through my business school. So, I called up back then, it was a money manager called Smith Barney, and I called the front desk and I said, listen, here's the deal. My name is Jay. I'm looking for an internship. Do you have anybody there who might have a need for an intern? And sure enough, they patched me through. I was down there the next day. I started the next day. So don't be afraid to call. Okay. Do not be afraid to call. Now, a lot of times now your college counselors and your schools, your respective career counseling services, they will have a list of internships, but they will not have all of them. But get involved. I will also tell you, though, that even if it's not something in a field that you want to do, let me back up and say, for me, if I'm going to hire an accountant, yes, having an internship in accounting is great, but also having a having experience in a business office for a local nonprofit is not a bad way either, right? I mean, you get dirty that way. You're making copies. You're removing staples from packets of paper. It's not glamorous work. I spent one entire summer shredding paper at Presbyterian Hospital. That was my entire summer, is shredding paper. But you know what? It gives you a good work ethic. And what it tells you is what you don't want to do for the rest of your life, and makes you seek what you do want to do for the rest of your life.
My final question is, do you have any final comments or sections that you feel we haven't covered yet in this interview, or any general advice that you'd give before we wrap up?
You know, get involved. Right now, I think in the state of what the world is in, getting involved in your community, and that depends on however you define your community. At my stage of life, right, that is my kids' schools, that is my scout troop, that is my YMCA. Get involved. I would say it is my opinion and my opinion only. Get involved that get involved in something that is rewarding to your family. In other words, you know, get involved with, in my case, it's school and YMCA, because that's where my kids are. Do something that's beneficial to your job. So get involved in something that's beneficial to your career. For me, that's FEI, Financial Executives International. And I mean, do both sides of that. If you devote everything to your career and everything, I think you lose out a lot on kind of what brings us joy and what brings us happiness. Even if in your entire career, or even if your entire interest is about accounting or managing money, guess what? Go find a retirement community and talk to them about what you do and what you find interesting, what you find impactful. I, just by nature of my job, I'm constantly using Excel. Okay. I have become a certified Excel expert. And right now, that is what I do, is I tutor companies and departments on how better to use that. You know, I get involved, do that, go back to my networking speech. That's very valuable. Network, 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 and do it correctly. Other than that, if you aren't having fun, you aren't doing it right, okay? We all need to earn money. I get that. But my father, one of the best words of wisdom my father ever told me is, don't necessarily go and try to find that job that pays you the most. Find the job that you enjoy the most. Because once you do that, all you're going to do is excel, and the money naturally is going to come after that, okay? So it's great that you aspire to be XYZ CEO of an organization, but you aren't going to get there if you don't enjoy. So follow your passions, follow those things that you like, and I guarantee you will make some, except for the Fortnite player. But that's just my own.
Thank you for taking time to address these questions. And
well, no, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you reaching out. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed hearing from Mr. Smith about the finance and accounting consultant role. Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, please visit pathfinder101.com for more content. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your day.